Hey, hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Ask Conrad. We're on number 58 now. Ask Conrad 58. Get out of here, Slick. Let's jump into it. Hazard F5 says, what movie do you think gets a lot of praise as being an amazing classic that you feel is mediocre at best? Wow. You know, I'm a bad person to ask about this because I haven't seen a lot of, what are those things? Lord of the Rings. I haven't seen any of those. So I just, you know, some of that stuff I just missed. I would probably say, man, I don't want to say Titanic, but that is where my brain went first. Oh, Avatar. Yeah, Avatar and Titanic. Those come to mind. And I know everybody likes Grease, but I hate all musicals. I know I shouldn't say that. I think Avatar is probably up there for me. What do you guys think? What's the most overrated movie? Brendan Caulfield says, do you ever reflect on any bad times in your life where things didn't go exactly your way, whether it's relationships, business, self-growth, etc., and see them as lessons now in hindsight? Lastly, I just want to really thank you for doing these Ask Conrads, my personal favorite of all the podcasts. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. And I love seeing your name. I'm seeing more and more of your questions and interactions on social and follow up on our pod. So I greatly appreciate that, man. We love all the help we can get, all the support we can get. But yeah, dude, at the time, you know, when those negative things happen, those failures in life happen, I think it's hard for anybody to see the silver lining. But I, like Jeff Jarrett, pretty quickly try to say, okay, let me turn on my delusional optimism. Let me see, is there a way to make this a positive? Is there a way to find the silver lining? And, you know, some of the best things that have ever happened to me have been born out of negative stuff. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but I was married once before. And I was with that young lady for 5 years, maybe six. And we were only married just under a year. And then we realized, hey, you know what? We've just grown apart. You know, we got hooked up together and we were 19 years old. And when you're 19, you can be mutually aligned with somebody, equally yoked, if you will. We have the same vision and plan for our lives. And then by the time you're 24, you're different people. And that's what happened with us. But man, I just took getting divorced as like an L. You know, my parents, as I'm 42 now, they've been married for over 43 years. So that was sort of what I looked at and saw as marriage. And then when I found myself getting divorced, I was like, oh man, a loser. Can't get divorced. And that was my attitude. You know, I mean, I looked at people who were divorced, like, man, they couldn't even hold their relationship together. Huh, what a loser. And then it happened to me. And it was like, oh, okay. So this is what that feels like. It's just a maturing process. You know, I'm able to, I don't know. I think I can look back on my life and professional failures and missteps and all that. And I can say, hey, I learned from that. That becomes what they call a teachable moment. And I'm better for it. And really, honestly, getting divorced is the best thing that ever happened for me. By the way, we're still friends. We're still in touch. She's remarried and has kids and is super happy. And so am I. So it worked out. I don't have any enemies in my life in that regard. Like, I'm one of those weird guys who's always friendly with exes and former people I used to work with. And like, I've had people at the mortgage company who either would quit or get fired. And then I'd hire them again. And some of them again. And some of them again. And I know that some people would say, well, that's silly. I don't think so. I mean, we're all growing. We're all learning. We're all trying to get better. And there's circumstances, you know, the business changed, their life changed, their circumstance changed, their focus changed. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe the biggest takeaway is I've learned to be less emotional and less judgmental and a little more accepting, a little more patient. But I've definitely learned some of those, and I still view them all as positives. Like, I hate, and I mean hate, when I hear people say things like, oh, she's been through so much. You know, she just had this happen and then this happened and then this happened. And I understand that all those things really did happen. But I love that old cliche, you know, life is 80% what happens to you, or, you know, it's 10% what happens to you and 90% how you respond. You know, we've all heard that. But that shit's real, you know, like, I got some bad news professionally 2 weeks ago, and I decided very quickly that I could find the positivity in that. And now I don't look at that event as a negative. I look at it as a positive. Hey, I'm able to do this now because of that. I think you've got to do that for everything. Out of self-preservation, you know, because if you start to just, oh, everything's so bad and it's just been through so much, you're speaking that shit into existence to me. Like, you are what you allow your brain to think about. So if that sort of stuff consumes you, man, before you know it, everywhere you look is negative. And now you're a negative person who nobody wants to be around. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Versus if you're always positive and always happy and trying to find the positive and happy, I guess what I'm saying is you'll find what you look for in life. Evan from Ad Free Shows says, is there a more current prime example of better land, less than, different than the Savannah Bananas baseball team? If they were just another minor league baseball team, no one would even care or know they exist. Instead, they flipped the thing on its ear and became the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball and created appointment entertainment. Evan from Ad Free Shows, I think that is an excellent different than. You know, I think that is the key to life. It is the one thing I've taken away more than anything else from Eric Bischoff. Better than, less than, different than. And we really leaned into it this year at Top Guy Weekend, and it worked. Matt says, good candidate for the false finish. Jason Hervey? Do you know what he's up to these days? I don't think he's a candidate because he wasn't necessarily always an on-screen character. I mean, he was always sort of a business guy in his more recent life and certainly an actor before that. I do know that he's working on a few different things in content creation. I probably shouldn't spill the beans, but I've heard through the back channel that there were opportunities to work together, and he's got this talent and that talent and might need some sales support and blah, blah, blah. I don't think we ever did a deal, but I know he's still actively working in content creation. And I guess maybe 10 years ago, I saw he was doing a Popcorn Sutton. What did Popcorn make? Moonshine out of Nashville, but I'm not a moonshine guy or a pretend moonshine guy, so I don't know about that. Jeremy Priest says, were you a big fan of the Law & Order franchise? I'm currently watching Criminal Intent, and it's phenomenal so far. My goal is to finish this one and eventually watch them all. No, my wife would watch them. Sometimes there would be something like that on TV when we would travel, and she would stop, and I would watch it. She watches those shows when I'm recording podcasts, though. If it's some sort of murder mystery type thing, or Law & Order, or CSI, or if it's somebody got dismembered or somebody got shot or who done it, and you know, there's a car chase, my wife's all into it. But no, I haven't seen any Law & Order on purpose, but I've probably seen 30 episodes. David Diamond says, any updates on the Starcast Australia show? Offering up my services to volunteer to help. Yeah, expect an update soon. We're doing another of our little team meetings this afternoon at 5:00 as I'm recording this. But the announcement will be made sooner rather than later. Michael Whitaker says, with Top Guy Weekend now over, what was your favorite part of the weekend? And out of the three, where do you rank this year's event? I mean, I think they're all kind of a tie. Like, I thought the first year was so fun because we had so many surprise guests. I mean, we had Big Show, and we had FTR, and we had Jerry Lawler, and we had Scott D'Amore. And I mean, that was super fun. Then And then last year, man, we did the Mongo thing. So we had Foley and we had Ric Flair. And I mean, I just think both of those were super, super fun. But then this year, totally different, maybe less star power, but man, it was fun. I mean, honestly, this format, I think, got better reviews than the first two. So I think interactive might be the key. Maybe we'll continue to do more of that. But I enjoyed it all. And I think my favorite part was the booking meeting. And then putting the show together, you know, the actual putting together the actual wrestling show that day, not just the meeting, but the execution of the different groups and then the actual matches. That's probably my favorite part. Tony Flowers says, you likely don't get starstruck much these days when meeting wrestling folks, but at some point in your life you may have. When is the last time, if ever, you were overwhelmed or speechless meeting a favorite wrestling legend? The first time I met Vince was a big deal. That was kind of shocking because you don't really know what to say. Like, what do you say? Another time would have been the first time Hulk Hogan knew my name. So it's like the second time I've met Hogan, I think. I'm backstage at an autograph show with Ric Flair. This would have been 2014 or 15. And he just said, maybe it was 16. It was definitely 15. I remember now. And he goes, oh, yeah, Conrad, what's going on, man? And I was like, oh, my God. Hulk Hogan knows my name. That was super cool. And then the first time I met The Rock, like, The Rock is like, you shake his hand and you're wondering, are you a real person? Like, that dude's a cyborg level of entrepreneur and performer and businessman. So, yeah, those are probably the top three, like, holy shit. Raymond Richard says, one discussion I haven't heard is the Mount Rushmore of promos. I came across Cody versus Dustin promo, and that one hits different and made me think of the question, what's yours? If I had to say mine in no particular order, it's Ric Flair's Spilt Liquor, Stone Cold's Austin 316, Dusty Rhodes' Hard Times, and I think that Cody Rhodes one might be right up there. Man, that's hard. I don't really know what all I would put on this. I think I agree with you. Hard Times is up there. That'd be number one. Spilt Liquor is up there. That's probably on there too. But those other two, man, I think that's up for debate. I like we're having the conversation at least. I mean, when you think about importance, Hulk Hogan turning heel and Austin 316. But if you're removing importance and you're just saying, no, it was a money promo, then you got to think the pipe bomb would be on there. So maybe it's Ric Flair's Spilt Liquor, Dusty Rhodes' Hard Times. Fuck. It's hard, you know, right there, I've got five and I need four. I think I got to put Austin 316 and the Hogan ones in there just because of business. But like the Flair one, as great as it was, I don't know that it did the business. But it's so well quoted to this day. All right, I guess I'll drop Hogan and slide the Punk one in there. Of course, the Hogan one led to much, much bigger business. I'm not arguing that. But like, think about how many times Austin 316 is quoted or used, how many times Hard Times is quoted or used, how many times the Spilt Liquor thing is used, and then just the phrase pipe bomb. I mean, that was used a lot. So yeah, that's probably mine. Great question, Raymond. Bravo. Keith says, this question is from my wife and not me. She wants to know if you know the people from Love and Marriage Huntsville and what do you think of them? Remember, this question is not from me. It's from the wife. Thanks, Conrad, for all you do. You know, I don't know who all's on that now. Let me see. I know I have seen some of it, and I do know a few folks. I've met Martel, but I know Mr. Scott. I know Mr. Scott. So, yeah, I've met him before. He has a credit business here in Huntsville, and that's how I met him. But I'm 1 degree separated from somebody who's friends with all them. We have a mutual friend, but I'm not actively, you know, we don't hang out or anything. But like Mr. Scott knows me and I know him and he's been to my office and I know what he drives and he knows what I drive and all that sort of thing. Aaron says, being a fan of the original ECW and having attended a lot of their shows, do you have a favorite event you attended? Well, listen, the most important one was CyberSlam 99 because that was my first one. But I did get to go to Guilty as Charged 2000 here in Birmingham, which was a pay-per-view. I got to see the tapings at the Tabernacle where Dusty Rhodes came out of the crowd and messed up Steve Corino. That was fun. I got to see a lot of house shows, one in Dalton, one in Birmingham. Where else did I go? Man, it feels like I went somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, my favorite, though, for sure, CyberSlam 99. Not close. Braden says, any chance of AFS moving away from Patreon in the foreseeable future? I remember hearing you say something to that effect in the podcast in the last year or two. Yeah, listen, we've always looked at ideas and opportunities. In the end, I don't want something that's buggy. So we started working on something on our own. And then, you know, our focus shifted away. But I still have some ideas and I've got some IP in my back pocket and something will happen eventually. But right now we're happy with Patreon. You know, our two biggest gripes, they've made some strides on, the biggest of which was anniversary billing. And yeah, I would love to see them continue to evolve the app and improve that for you guys. But for now, I think it's just the easiest solution. As far as advice is choosing where I go to snag tickets for All Out, it's going to be my first pay-per-view and major pro wrestling event in a venue of such a capacity. I assume you mean All Out, not All In, because All In for Wembley is a different animal. You're talking about such a capacity. Whereas, you know, United Center, I think, is where they're doing the pay-per-view. So that's like a 20,000 seater here in Chicago. I would recommend you get a bundle from StarCast. If you guys haven't already, let me just tell you, you're going to be missing out if you don't go to StarCast. We're doing some things differently. We've got some different alignments behind the scenes, and that's created a little bit of a delay in the way we would normally do things, but boy, is it going to be worth it. You've seen Dennis Rodman be announced. I'm not sure when this is dropping, but there's another announcement coming that nobody's expecting that's going to be big. And I've got a couple legends up my sleeve you don't want to miss, but it's going to be super fun. So I would encourage you, if you're going to be in Chicago, go get a bundle. We got some ringside seats. We got some lower level seats. You can get a bracelet and tickets. Good to go. Chris says, do you believe All In will be on traditional pay-per-view or possibly available on Max or other? I think All In will be on pay-per-view. That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's real or not, but that's what I've heard. Jesse says in 98, they changed the WWF title design. They changed the Reggie Parks IC title design, and they kept the tag title design until 02. Why did they change the tag title design in 98 along with the WWF and IC titles? I think they were a little different, but a minor enough difference that it wasn't crazy. But I do think there was a tiny difference, a little change. But what happened is they went from Reggie to Jamar. So Joe Marshall just took over. And as I understand it, he got that gig by first sending in the European Championship. They liked it, wanted to do a different sort of licensing deal from Reggie, and then just pivoted away. I prefer Reggie's designs over Joe Marshall's, but I do love the Big Eagle. I think the Undisputed is a good-looking belt. It was underrated, but it's a good-looking belt. His IC eventually grew on me, the Oval. I still prefer the old one. I thought he did a great job, though. I mean, the Smoking Skull belt was certainly innovative at the time, too. Jake says, looking back at the AFS archives, you had an awesome rare clip of Radio WWF with JR and Gorilla Monsoon calling the 94 Rumble. Do you think broadcasting wrestling on terrestrial or satellite radio can work in today's age with either WWE or AEW? I don't know that it would do substantial numbers because I don't know, like doing a Royal Rumble is a pay-per-view. I think that could work. You know, if you wanted to have audio from a pay-per-view on a satellite subscription service, maybe for big non-televised live events. I don't know. I don't see it for TV though. Like, I don't know who would opt to do one or the other, but I hear you. I mean, maybe there's people who are, you know, traveling up and down the road sort of deal. You know, if you're making towns or if you're working or, you know, you drive a truck or whatever, I suppose, but I don't think it's a huge opportunity. I just think the world's changed. Here's one from Chi-Town Wrestling Kid. Straightforward question. Star Wars or Star Trek or neither and why? Neither, because fuck that space shit. I don't know another way to say it. Fuck that space shit. I don't want your old in ancient times bullshit either. And I damn sure don't want to sit still for your fantasy. I'm a shapeshifter. I can fight dragons. I can fly around bullshit. So if it's sci-fi said differently, I ain't with it. I know that makes no sense that I'm a pro wrestling fan and feel that way, but it is what it is. And of course, I'm only being a little tongue in cheek. If I had to pick between Star Wars and Star Trek, it's Star Wars all day and it ain't close. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but I can name like 12 characters. So I know who they are. I've at least seen the stuff. Outside of Beam Me Up, Scotty and Spock and Shatner, and there was some motherfucker named Picard. I don't know. Oh, and they had that. Who's the homie with the little skinny, weird glasses? Reading Rainbow Cat. That's all I got. I don't know anything else about Star Trek. And I feel like I know too much. Tomas says, I don't know where you would fit it in, but any chance you could do something about Adrian Adonis? Man, I would love to do something about Adrian Adonis. I just don't know anybody who spent a lot of time working with him. Maybe we could do like a round table, but like, I don't think Eric ever worked with him. I don't think Tony ever worked with him. If JR worked with him, I don't think it was probably very long, but maybe there was a bit. But like, I don't think Bruce spent much time with him. I mean, I know that there's a little bit there, but I mean, we ain't getting a 2-hour episode out of it. Just to be honest, that's the reason we didn't immediately try to do one, you know, around the Dark Side of the Ring. Cause I think that's, to me at this point, that's still the best Dark Side of the Ring of the year. Have you considered doing an interview with Guy Evans or the author of JR's book? I think it would give great insight into the person both behind Eric and JR. Actually, we've had them on. Both of those guys are available in the archives. Paul O'Brien and Guy Evans. If you just search through our archives, you'll find it. We've had them both. So enjoy. Leland Patterson says, hey, Conrad, what are a couple questions that you could ask Vince? And he answers with complete honesty. Small twist, you can only ask about actual storylines we saw on TV, not the business. Well, I mean, I think I would probably talk about Montreal. Although, you know, that's been discussed a million times. Oh, I would talk the, yeah. Okay. Let's back up off Montreal. I would talk about Sergeant Slaughter and WrestleMania 7 and how they moved from the stadium to the arena, quote unquote, for safety reasons. I mean, I almost want to talk about WrestleMania 9 with Hogan over Bret, but there's probably something in there instead we could ask about. Huh. Those are great questions, though. If you were going to ask about creative and storylines, I mean, that's where my brain went first. I might try those. Rob says, do you listen to the pods you don't record? If so, do you give notes or things you would like them to do? Yeah, Rob, I'll check in whenever we launch a new show. Sometimes the host will say, hey, we were looking for feedback. Will you take a listen and let me know what you think? And I'll certainly share my thoughts, but it's usually complimentary. I don't really have a lot of time to listen to pods though, except when I'm traveling. So like when I hit the road, I'm recording right now from Pensacola. And when I'm driving down here, I've got 5 hours between my house there and my house here. So I can knock out a few episodes. So I will probably load up a few of those and, you know, I'll give positive feedback, but the shows are kind of their thing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to tell Sean Oliver and Kevin Nash what to do on their show. And I'm not going to tell Kurt Angle and Pauly Bromwell what to do on their show. And hey man, it's y'all's show. You should do exactly what you want. You know what I mean? Michael Barrett says, hey Conrad, you're an established fan of Arnold and Sly, but what'd you think of some of the action stars of the 80s and 90s, like Jean-Claude Van Damme and Steven Seagal? I was never a Steven Seagal fan. My parents liked him. My dad loved Charles Bronson. My dad liked Chuck Norris. I was a Jean-Claude Van Damme fan. I watched his stuff for sure. Aiden says, hey, Conrad, not sure if you've watched the American Gladiators documentary on Netflix. I have. I think there's two out there. There's one on Netflix and one somewhere else. I watched them both. I wondered, has American Gladiators got anything to do with the downswing of wrestling in the early 90s? It launched in 89 and goes till 95. Doing low-budget TV with muscle-bound athletes, even ran shows in MSG and other wrestling venues. No, I mean, listen, that thing petered out. You know, they were only around for 6 years. WWE was still doing really strong business in 89. It did take a dip in 90. It dipped even further in 91 and 92 and 93 and 94 and then certainly 95. But it was cratering when they were cratering. I think, you know, wrestling is cyclical. It'll get hot and it'll cool off again. The American Gladiators just cooled off, but maybe they're going to do something else. Who knows? Hey, Conrad, with some in media speculating Cody and Roman 2 at WrestleMania 40, do you think people will still care enough for the rematch and for Cody to finish the story finally? I'm on the fence because this means Cody needs to become back-to-back multiple winner, Rumble winner, and the way the Bloodline story has been happening, it makes me want to see Solo and Roman with Solo winning at Mania. Well, listen, I think you're going to get some of that storyline. I mean, let's remember, we're talking about something that happens next April, and we're in early August. So we got 8 months to get there. We got a ton of time to get there. So maybe we'll see some of that before it happens. I don't know that Cody has to win the Rumble. I mean, I don't know that that's the way it gets. I mean, maybe it does. but maybe there's another way to get there. But him being a back-to-back Rumble winner, that's pretty cool. It's only happened a handful of times, I think. Richie, I do think that's what they're doing, if that's what you're asking. I think if they can get The Rock, Rock Roman at WrestleMania is big business. And if they can't, then part two. And I'm pulling for that one. Richie says, Yo, Connie, how do you think the pitch went when Vince was buying up the territories? Couldn't have been just a fax back and forth, right? No. Vince would oftentimes come in and make an offer. And if they told him to go piss up a rope, then he would just call their TV station and buy it out from under them, and then call their top talent and offer more money. So as I understand it, a lot of times he would start with, hey, I'd like to have your territory. Here's my offer. Some guys like Ole Anderson would say, hey, fuck you and go fuck yourself and fuck your wife too. Something like that. Seriously, that's what Ole said. And so then he said, okay, well, I'll just buy all your wrestlers and buy your TV and see you later. And that's what happened. That's unfortunate, but I mean, that's the way that sort of thing happened. Do you know where the TNA tag belts are? I mean, I had a set once that I flipped pretty quickly because I didn't care about them. I know that Jeff has a set for sure. There's probably a few others. I'm not a big tag belt guy. I have a WWF tag that was held by Austin and Shawn and Foley and who else? The Road Warriors and the New Age Outlaws and Davey and Owen and the Headbangers, you know, that era. And then I've got the actual blue tags from Crockett. There were two sets. I've got the one you'd want to have. I had one of the others as a single, but I have that full set. So, you know, everybody from the Steiners to the Rock and Rolls to the Midnights to the Road Warriors, I got to Arn and Tully. I got that set. I don't really have any other tag belts though. Just those three. I'm not really a tag belt guy. Have you ever called a match? If so, what match? Yeah, they had an NWA show in St. Louis a couple of years ago. And I was fortunate enough to be able to call a match there. And I wanted to do prep and I wanted to be ready, but I still wasn't ready. I mean, I don't know that you'll ever. The only way to get good at something is to really work at it. And I haven't had a chance to work on it before or since, but it was fun. I mean, I appreciated the opportunity. It was really great to be there. Tony says, if I've understood it correctly, you've spoken in the past about paying wrestling legends to come over and watch wrestling with you and your friends. Not looking to expose anyone's income in general. How much does something like that average? I realize it depends on who it is, but can you give a high, low range? Yeah. So what happened is I did a Kickstarter. I was the top supporter, and I think it was $5,000 on this documentary that if you did this, they gave you all these perks and they would bring a wrestling legend to your house. You got to pick which ECW legend it was to come screen the movie. So I said, dude, send Shane Douglas. I mean, because that dude had wrestled in the territories, came up with Foley, wrestled for all the major organizations. Seriously, TNA, WWE, ECW, WCW. It was cool. We had a great time. And then when it was over with, me and my friends were like, man, that was awesome. I wonder who else we could do that with. And it turns out Jim Cornette was going to be not too far. And we made a pitch and ta-da, it was done. Jim came over and I made steaks for everybody and we sat around and listened to stories, but no pictures, no autograph, no meet and greet, no photos, no shoot interview. Just, hey, let's have an eat and greet, which is what I did at Starcast. If you'll recall the first few Starcasts, I did something called an eat and greet. I didn't want fans to just have an opportunity to do pictures and autographs for a little extra money. But if you just sat at the same table with your favorite wrestling legend and y'all all ate and told stories and asked questions and it's casual and, you know, leave your phones at the door so you can hear the real deal. I mean, if you want to, you know, turn it into a YouTube show, you can, but it won't be the same thing. So just be casual, be cool and listen to stories. And so then from there, man, people just started vouching for me. So we had, you know, JJ Dillon over and Jake the Snake over and the Steiner brothers and DDP. We had a fun little run there. Lex Luger came over. I hear what you're saying about not disclosing anyone's income. $1,500, $2,500. I mean, that was usually the deal. Sometimes they'd ask for $1,500. Sometimes they'd say, hey, I need $2,500. And it was an easy deal for us to all say, hey, yeah, let's all get together. And, you know, at times it maybe is a dozen of my friends and other times it's like six or seven. But what we did is we had like a really cool little experience. I mean, Terry Funk in your house telling stories. Pretty cool. Bryant says, I'm writing this the day before the Hall of Fame weekend in Waterloo. What does it mean to you to be inducted in the Wrestling Hall of Fame? Is this something you hope for one day? And what was your experience like at the Hall of Fame? First of all, Bryant, thank you for coming. I was delighted to be there and to see you there. It meant a lot to know that you were there. And I know you probably weren't there just for me, but by God, it made me feel good to think that maybe there was a chance you were. No, I never imagined I'd be in the freaking Hall of Fame. Like, that's crazy to even think about. It was never a goal of mine. It's not something I ever imagined possible. I never considered myself, and still don't consider myself, worthy of being in a Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. You know, these guys have really sacrificed and paid the price and honed their craft. And what did I do? I mean, I just had an idea and clicked record. I'm not deserving of that opportunity, but at the same time, I am really proud of what we've done. You know, we did run, you know, one of the biggest independent shows ever last year, and we did innovate with StarCast, and we did help level up pro wrestling podcasts to the point where we had international tours and a show on the network. And I mean, I'm just a mortgage guy. I should not have been doing anything with Vice on TV, but there I was, my big old obese ass doing it. And that's crazy to think about. And it was crazy to get to call a match in St. Louis, you know, with in that Wrestling at the Chase. I mean, Mike, what, how am I here? How am I doing a TV thing at the ECW arena? Like, this is silly stuff, but to be able to stand at that podium and kick off AEW and announce it and help get Bruce Pritchard, you know, out of managing an attorney's office and back in one of the most powerful seats in all of wrestling, and Tony Schiavone out of the Starbucks drive-thru and back behind a desk on TBS. Like, dude, it's just, what? You know, I'm the Forrest Gump of wrestling. So I'm the luckiest dude. I'm the luckiest wrestling fan of all time. I do not deserve to be in the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. I'm humbled and overwhelmed and grateful, but I'm also glad to pay it forward and do more and give back. And I had some conversations last week that I probably shouldn't share just yet, but the Hall of Fame ain't heard the last of me. So we're going to have some fun in Waterloo. Thanks again for coming, Brian. Aiden says, on the Glacier interview, he talked about Dusty's own promotion. I never knew about it, and I think it would be interesting to hear about other famous talent that tried to make their own promotion. Top of my head could be interesting. Dusty, Cornette, Booker T. Yeah, man, a lot of talent have tried it over the years, and Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling was Dusty's. Maybe we should do something on that one day. Not a bad idea. Joseph said, I want to start off by saying you're truly an inspiration and make me want to strive to be better each and every day. Wow, thanks, man. I've been listening to Zig Ziglar on how to stay motivated, and I started that in January this year, and it's done wonderful things to me overall. However, I still have trouble staying positive and getting motivated. I've been struggling with this, especially in the last month or so. My question is, what do you do, or what did you used to do when you had trouble staying positive and staying motivated? Joseph, the first thing I would do, I would encourage you to do two things. Well, three, I guess. Number one, make a list of your goals and work backwards. Meaning, I'm sure Nick Saban wants to win the national championship this year. But in order to win the national championship, he has to win his playoff game. And in order to win a playoff game, he has to win the SEC championship. And in order to win the SEC championship, he has to win out the regular season. In order to win out the regular season, he's got to beat these teams individually. In order to beat these teams individually over the course of four quarters, he's got to beat them in the first and the second half. And then he's got to beat them in the first half. And then he's got to beat them in the second quarter. And then he's got to beat them in the first quarter. And then he's got to beat them on this drive. And then he's got to beat them on this snap. And that's what it gets down to. So I know that sounds silly, but I want you to break your real goal down into the activities that will make that goal a reality. So if this was a sales conversation, all right, I want to make 200 grand this year. All right, that's a good idea, but that ain't a full goal. Let's drill it down. In order to make, we'll call it 240 for the sake of this, for easy math. In order to make $240,000 this year, I need to make $20,000 a month. In order to make $20,000 a month, I need to make $5,000 a week. If I'm going to work 5 days a week, I need to make $1,000 a day. If I'm going to work 10 hours a day, That's a lot now. But if I'm going to work 10 hours a day, I got to make $100 an hour. What can you do right now, today, to make yourself not $100 an hour, $200 an hour? If you started focusing all of your activities on, I've got to do whatever I can do to make $200 in this hour, every hour. If you do that, then at the end of your 10-hour day, if you worked a 10-hour day, then that is $2,000. Now, if you take that $2,000 and you multiply it out for the whole week, right? Look there. You didn't do $5,000 that week. You did 10. That's my point. I want you to set a goal, back it down, get very specific. You take your goals from being very general to very specific, and then aim for more. I really do believe if you set a goal for yourself, I want to lose 100 pounds, you're going to get to like 80 or 90 and plateau. I want to make $100,000. You're going to get to like 80 or 90 and plateau. I don't know why our brains work this way, but we all have what I call an income thermostat. Actually, Brian Tracy calls it that. The idea being that your actions will always keep you around the same income. You've got to get out of that. You've got to shake it off. If you're a $60,000 a year motherfucker right now, you're putting out $60,000 a year worth of effort. Your brain thinks about $60,000. Your efforts work about $60,000. You got to change that. You got to retrain it. So I would say take a very generic goal and get it down to a very specific goal. And then maybe you won't be a $60,000 a year motherfucker. Maybe you'll be a $100,000 a year motherfucker. But when you figure out what that specific goal is on a daily, hourly basis, it'll become more achievable. So number one, I get very specific with my goals. Number two, I would make sure that I had a real to-do list and I would day part block it. You got to time block it in your phone. And you're going to do that no matter what. Meaning, I know when you're saying, how do I stay motivated? You've got to stay busy. So the old cliche is true. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Have a real to-do list when you finish your job today. So if you're working 10 hours today, that last 30 minutes, make tomorrow's to-do list. And don't just write it down on a notebook sheet of paper like I used to do. Go ahead and do what I had to learn to adopt, which was I want to time block it. And so there's going to be certain things in your day that you don't want to do. And I think, as I understand it, there's a famous book out there written about that, Eat That Frog. The idea being the shit you don't like doing, do it first. Usually the shit you don't like doing is the stuff that will either keep you from being productive through the rest of the day, and you'll just dread it and really half-ass your day because you're trying to avoid that and don't want to think about it. You just need to rip the Band-Aid off and get it over with. Or it's the thing that makes you the most money. Either way, knock that shit out. So number one, get very specific with your goals. Number two, day part and plan your whole day. And then the last one, you become what you think about. Don't sit around watching fucking YouTube and don't ride to work listening to Sirius XM. When you're in your car, be feeding your brain something. The Automobile University, as I've heard it called by Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy, changed my life. There's a whole section, and I recognize I'm a fucking podcaster telling you this, and I'm telling you, don't listen to me. I guess you could listen to me, but don't listen to my wrestling content, and that'd be a fun escape for your day. That has a time and a place. But when you're on your way to work, when you're on your way home from work, I want to be thinking about getting in the right frame of mind. I want to be thinking about getting in the right frame of mind on my way to work to kick today's ass. And I want to be thinking about how to stay positive on the way home. Because if you get your ass kicked for a living at work, and I've done that for a long time, damn sure have a lot in the last 2 years, it's so easy to walk out of there and drive home and think, God damn, this sucks and that sucks. And can you believe, man, that's negative bullshit. I need to be listening to something that's going to keep me motivated for tomorrow, to kick tomorrow's ass. I don't want to go home defeated. Because when I go home, you know what my wife doesn't want to see? A Conrad she's got to worry about. Oh, he had a bad day. He's all stressed out. Something bad happened. I got to take care of him. No, she deserves to have a good night too. She had a good day at work too. We got to talk about that sort of thing. So I would encourage you to try to change what you're feeding your brain on your way to work and on your way home. Feed it that positivity. And one last thing in feeding your brain, if you're not already, start reading books. Find some positive books, find some Brian Tracy books, some Zig Ziglar books, stick them in your toilet. Seriously, stick one by your bed. Maybe just use the same one back and forth. I know that's disgusting, but it's your shit, buddy. But knock that one book out and read a little bit every day. Read it when you're having your morning constitution. Read it before you go to bed at night. Just block that off. But if you're on your way to work, feeding your brain positive, you're on your way home from work, feeding your brain positive, and then you've made sure that you're reading a little bit in the morning, reading a little bit in the evening, hey, play your wrestling podcast on the weekends. Just my two cents. I love this one. I recently found out my downstairs bathroom had a bidet in it, and I've never even used my upstairs bathroom again. Listen, I know I get a lot of shit online about that. I don't use a bidet. I use washlets. And every toilet in my house has one now. And I love it. And they're only like $150. They'll get you one. Francisco says, hey, Conrad, in past STW episodes, you've talked about your favorite video packages like WWE's Lonely Road of Faith or My Sacrifice. Which one was your favorite? Do you think we'll ever see packages like that again? Thank you for all you do and congrats on the Hall of Fame induction. Well, thank you, Francisco. I appreciate that. I think Lonely Road of Faith is probably one of my favorites. The Sacrifice one is great. I know everybody loves the WrestleMania 17 countdown one. I think we have seen really great packages since, but there's so much content and they're so shareable on social media and we're always looking for the next viral thing. I think JR was on the money, and maybe Foley said this too. Like the Hell in a Cell thing from 98, today that would have been a headline for like 2 days and then we moved on. Because there's just so much. Like the way we consume social media, it's just easier for something to go viral as opposed to this one thing happened, and that's the coolest thing we've seen. And we don't see anything like that again for weeks, years, or months that takes our attention and captivates our imagination. Whereas now it's like, all right, here's the dude falling off a cage. Oh, did you see this lady survive this shark bite? Oh, and look at this. This went viral. This is a baby running with a hammer. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like silly non-wrestling stuff can just take our attention away right away. So I think we've had great packages. Like that Hangman entrance video from a few years ago was fantastic and so well done. And I mean, just the stuff they did for Cody Rhodes last year, fantastic. I've seen some really, really well done videos. It's just, you know, times have changed. So no, I don't think we'll look at those videos that way ever again. Richie says, have you ever had a Crystal's chili cheese pup? No, but I used to date a girl who would say that she didn't eat beef, but she would, whenever she would get drunk, she would want a cheeseburger. And one time when she got really drunk, she said she wanted a chili cheese pup from Crystal's. And I thought, of all the things, how in the world? But the rest of the time, yeah, man, she wasn't eating a hamburger. She ain't eating steak. She was not eating. Like if she went to a Mexican restaurant, she's not eating a beef soft taco. Like that ain't a thing. She just did not eat beef. Get a little liquor in her though. Chili cheese pup. When did WWE start letting the ringside seats go home with you? Man, I think that existed in the 90s. I know it did, you know? So like WrestleMania 13 had it. I remember that. I don't think it was like a fancy design, but I know they had like ringside chairs that I think just had the company logo on it and stuff. But yeah, the mid 90s for sure. Two Count Kyle says, what do you think AEW's best and most important match has been? I'll ask those as two separate questions. For example, Ospreay Omega Forbidden 2 is one of the best matches I've ever seen. But tempted to say best, I feel like Cody and Dustin might be most important. The buzz around that match online is what made me first take a chance on the new wrestling company. I think the most important match in AEW wrestling history is Cody and Dustin. And I think the most anticipated was Omega and Danielson. Just my two cents. Well, that'll do it for us today, folks. Appreciate all your questions here on Ask Conrad Volume 58. Be sure to drop your questions below. Evan will collect them and we'll be back sooner rather than later for Ask Conrad Volume 59.